VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
I want to welcome everybody to week two of year five. We just turned another year into the past and started another one into the future, which just makes us pretty happy around here. So we are, as usual, grateful for all of the regulars that have tuned back in. You're the ones that make us able to do this, and the new people constantly come in here, add to our wanting to do this, because we know we're constantly getting new listeners, and we hear it in the office, we hear it around, and sometimes I get things quoted back to me that I said, and it's sometimes even positive.
Yeah, and something else that was new I learned last weekend, we are now the only AM talk show on at this time, or finance-related AM talk show on at this time, so who knew? There's just one AM talk show now, or talk station now.
Yep. And I will put in my word right now with the powers that be that we don't change that.
Yeah,
because
for
in
sure.
certain parts of town, including where I live, the AM signal on 600 is far better than the FM signal on 101.1. I think having the choice is kind of what this country's all about, isn't it?
Sure.
And you see where I'm going with that one, I can tell.
Yeah.
Oh, we have to do some laughing today because it was one hysterical week.
It was so good.
And it relates about as closely to financial things as anything could possibly be in the political world.
Yeah, so no doubt.
We have a few choice comments about all of that. One in particular, a quote from a very famous guy, an excellent economist. Oh, wait, I wrote it.
You're
what
not
you
an economist.
At? The heck I'm not. I have a minor. It's that, a lot more than AOC has.
That does not make you an economist.
No, but the 50 years I've studied it help.
Sure.
Yeah. See, he's reluctantly acquiescing, not agreeing. There's a difference. All right, enough of that. Anyway, welcome back. And for all of you who just want to listen to us talk about the things we want to talk about, stick with us for an hour, and we hope to have something that is worth listening to. But if you want to change the topic in any way, shape, or form, pick up the phone and dial 904-222-TALK, 222-8255. Callers go to the head of the line, always. And the only way you're not at the head of the line is if there's a caller ahead of you. How about that? We will be doing a trivia question at the beginning of the second segment, and we will get into that. That's also monetary in nature. We try very hard here to avoid topics like politics and religion, because you can listen to shows all you want about those things. Sometimes the politics very, very much interfere with the financial topics, especially when in periods of time when stupidity exceeds common sense, and we are in one right now. But enough of that right now. I told Adam, well, actually, Howard and Angela were introducing us at just before they signed off their show, and they looked out into the next room where we were and said, how are things in the market? And they received a sideways and a thumbs up. I had the thumbs up, but my reasoning was a little different than Adam's, and I'll have him tell you as part of the market rep why that was my opinion.
Yep. Did you know the market went up this week?
I did not either.
I actually thought the opposite. I thought it was down a little bit, but it was like that because Monday and Tuesday saw gains, and then those gains were erased on Wednesday and Thursday, and then Friday was down almost all day until a late push.
Pretty sharply in some
made
cases.
Made it positive on all but the Dow.
Mm-hmm.
So all the good happened early in the week, and then the rest of the week felt horrible, even though it really wasn't that bad.
I love the buying into the finish, though.
Sure,
people
definitely
want to hold them over the weekend. That's a separate attitude from people wanting to sell into the weekend.
So when I gave a thumb sideways, I meant that the market was pretty much flat because there really wasn't much movement net throughout the 5 days.
And my thumb up was simply because I was so pleasantly surprised this morning when I did the numbers.
Yeah. The Dow was up by 0.2%. The S&P was almost, I think it was within 1.3 points of where it opened.
Virtually dead flat.
And the NASDAQ gained 0.5%. Mm-hmm. So the S&P is trading well above its 50-day moving average, but it bounced pretty hard off its 200-day moving average this week, which means that we've seen short-term positive movement in the index, but the long-term trend is not quite positive yet.
The technical traders have their computers set at the 200, yeah. And when it hits there, they bounce it back. My personal feeling is that it's going to take a few of those to get above
probably.
Again. But I'm still predicting that it will.
I think so, too, but I don't know when will happen. That could be a while.
You also note that there was a steady decline in volume on the market all week long. It just kind of tapered off and fell asleep. That just means they're not ready to do anything yet, but it's not a sell-off. That's a positive. And it's above the 50, and that is another positive.
Yeah.
I'm an optimist.
I wouldn't be surprised if it bounced between the two for a while either. So we'll see what happens with that.
Range trading is a fine thing. As long as it breaks out one way or the other, and that one way is up.
Well, then that's not one way or the other, is it? Anyways.
Not exactly.
So we saw some other trends reverse this week. Energy, which had been leading the rally all year, dropped more than 3%, and that was because oil dropped sharply this week, which I'll get to in a bit. Utilities, which have been lagging the rest of the market, traded up more than 2%. That's a big move for utilities in 1 week.
It is.
Technology, which was kind of right in the middle, had a really nice week, gaining almost 2%. However, the best performing sector this year is now industrials, which who would have thought?
Nobody's talking about them.
No, and I actually would have predicted that would have happened last year, but they were well behind the rest of the market last year. And so kind of surprising.
Because last year there was a recession coming this year.
Right, yeah. It, kind of surprising to see it, but they're up more than 13% year to date. And it makes a lot of sense to me because everything Trump is doing would benefit that sector. So if anything that he is currently working on goes through, you're going to see that trade continue, I would imagine. Another reversal we saw this week was in Brazil, which have been doing nothing but going up since their election. This week, their markets gave back 5% or 10%, somewhere in that range, but they had it to spare because they're still up more than 12% this year. The European markets did not fare quite as well this week as doom and gloom and forecasts of a recession persist for that part of the world.
Yeah,
which
it's Brexit
that one,
fear too.
That one I'm not as skeptical of that one as I am of a U.S. recession.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not either. But I think this whole, there is a Brexit date, March 29th, something like that.
Yeah.
And I think they're all just beside themselves pulling their hair out that there might not be, quote, a deal. And then it'll all collapse, according to them, because you can't just go it alone, can you?
You probably can.
Yeah, you just wait about 2 weeks into the Brexit thing when they all wake up and say, oh, my God, I am so surprised, but the sky didn't fall.
Yeah, those people in Brussels really haven't been doing anything for us this
whole
time.
They've been taking a lot
of
our money.
Yeah, and giving us weird rules that we have to follow, mm-hmm. But that's it. Commodities did not do so well this week, but it was really just oil and natural gas dropping. They both dropped about 5%. Don't know why that happened. Maybe the upcoming recession in Europe again. Who knows?
Who knows?
But they've been very volatile this year.
I think it has more to do with the dollar fluctuations than it does with anything else.
It could. And the overall index dropped just over 1%. And we have a little bit more that I'll get to right after the break.
Yeah, there's a reason not to be pessimistic, which is a lot easier to say than there's a reason to be highly optimistic. But I certainly would not be one right now to change the position I'm in. If you have some new money and you're filtering it into the market, keep doing it. I like dollar cost averaging in particular right now, but I certainly wouldn't be running away. We'll wrap up the market and get on to some other topics right after the break. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And all lines except one are open, 904-222-8255, and on the one that isn't open, good morning, Don.
Hey, can I ask a question regarding redistribution of wealth?
Sure.
Where did that come from?
Oh, gosh, I don't. The origins of it probably go back about as far as mankind. but it certainly became more and more noticeable with, well, you know, our pilgrims started with it, basically. They started on an equal basis. It didn't work and failed, and they invented capitalism, basically. But it goes back to Marx and Lenin and the basic communist socialist philosophy that from each according to his ability and to each according to his need, that's where it came from. And it sounds so good to people because there are more needy people than there are producers. So if you tell the story right, you can kind of see where the whole thing caught on. Point is,
well,
it doesn't work.
The way I understood this was, if you put money like in a 401k, the government has a regulation built into that system because they created it.
Well, they don't regulate what you invest in within most reasonable limitations.
Yeah, but the government gets a cut of it. They make you spend $20,000 a year, for example.
Oh, and I've got a whole thing I will do on required minimum distributions. I'm with you.
Well, what about taking your money out of your bank? I wonder if you got invested in it and putting it in another bank. Then what happens?
Nothing. You'll probably find out that the other bank is just as bad as the bank you left.
Yes, well, I figured it too.
Yeah. Generally not a taxable event, though, so the government wouldn't receive any of that.
Right. That's why
the government makes you spend your money, so you know it's just like taking money out of the bank.
Yeah. Well, now they literally do by charging you for health care. So, I mean, I guess that went away, but they did for a little while.
Yeah, well, we have to pay some taxes because there are some constitutional mandates that we have a government to do certain things. What got out of hand was when they started finding niceties instead of mandates and caused the government to grow and grow and grow, which reminds me, I'm going to do the trivia question on that very point today. And you can,
well, all I got to say is there are billions of dollars in debt now, and now it's trillions, ain't it?
Yep.
Oh, it's
about 22 of them.
Yep.
And you can't even count the number of zeros on that number.
And I wouldn't say they. I'd say we are $22 trillion in debt.
That's about $66,000 or so for every man, woman, and child in America. Something right in there. So you're born with original debt now.
Well, I pay my taxes, and I don't owe nobody nothing. Okay. But I guarantee you, the way things are going, that's all going to change.
Yeah, you can count on it. Unless we can educate the public, things are not going to get better. Hopefully we can do a little of that, and hopefully it shows like this, it'll get some people awakened to what's going on so they can maybe do something about fixing it.
So. All right, thank you, buddy.
Hey, thanks,
Don.
Appreciate the call. Speaking of the trivia question.
Yeah, very
one
good
of the
topic.
Things, one of the methods that has been used to redistribute wealth is the Federal Reserve. And I think most people out there know that I am no fan of the Federal Reserve. I've been shouting it from the microphones and radio stations for 17, 16 years, whatever. And, of course, nobody listens except people. I'm preaching to the choir, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Most people understand that. And if you wonder why I feel that way, I can always recommend the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, by Griffin, I believe his name is, which tells you about how the Fed came to be and all of the crazy things that had to happen to get it to happen. But that's not my point. My point is that one of the Fed's mission statement highlights is a stable dollar. Well, they have not been very good at that. If you made a dollar in 1913, that was the year the Fed came into being, if you made a dollar then and went out and bought something, how much do you have to make today to buy that same something? That's how much the dollar has declined. So how many dollars do you have to make to equal $1 in 1913? That is today's trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. All right. Left to talk about in the market are earnings season.
Yes. Earnings season is looking pretty good. The earnings beat rate stands at more than 65%, while the revenue rate is just under 60%. So there's one thing that's looking pretty negative right now, but it's not necessarily a negative. So when companies give their earnings, when they report their earnings, they also give sort of a guidance on what they're expecting in the future. And this quarter, it's been overwhelmingly negative. Now, I think what's happening is that they have had a really good year, and they're a little worried about 2019. What if we can't live up to expectations? So what they're doing is they're lowering their guidance going forward, which is actually a setup for another great year, because what happens when they lower guidance, their targets get lowered, and then it's much easier to beat them. So I expect that next quarter is going to look quite good.
And the market's mood right now is that they are rewarding companies that beat, and they're punishing companies that miss. So guess what I would do? I would make sure I didn't miss.
Yeah, exactly. So you can, I mean, the quarter that's happening right now, quarter one of 2019, when it comes to earnings season in another 3 months, I would expect that we might see a lot better than whatever the forecast might be.
I absolutely agree. You know, between the federal regulators and the people who are in the stock market, the heavy traders and all, you really want to be a little bit cautious about making any kind of mistake. Good morning, Mike.
Morning. How y'all doing?
Great. What's up with you?
I got a 401k question.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I'll be 61 this year, and I've got a 401k through the company I work with, and they don't seem, you know, like you ask them, what's the best, where should I be, where should my 401k money be, what should I be in? And they don't seem to want to tell you. They let you kind of pick things out, but they won't tell you where, because I guess they don't want to take a, you know, if you lose money, they don't want to be responsible for it or whatever. I don't know. So how do you know where you should be as far as positioning yourself in the 401k? Who can tell you that? Or if they're not going to tell you, what should I do?
Well, at my left hand, I have one of the better portfolio designers I've ever run across. I'm just going to sit back and listen to him.
So, Mike, there's a good reason that they don't tell you where you should be, because they are not investment advisors. And if they did that, they could be legally liable for anything that did happen and also for giving advice without being properly licensed to do so. So that's why no one at your company or in HR or at the 401k administrator, whoever that is, will tell you anything about that. That being said, there are places you can go. You can always call us or call me offline, even in the office, if you'd like. I'd be happy to run down your options with you and take a look at it. At 61 years old, you should definitely be starting to think a little bit more towards the preservation side, income side. I assume you don't want to work forever, and you want to have that money start working for you in a few years. So I would say that if you're very heavily into stocks, you should start looking at more into the bond side, but don't go so conservative that you take away any chance of taking advantage if the market moves another leg higher.
Okay, because the people that have our 401k, those were the guys I was asking as to where should I be, and they wouldn't tell me anything.
Who's holding it? Is it an insurance company or a brokerage?
No, it's a brokerage. It's T. Rowe Price. So basically what I need to do is get with some guys like y'all and let y'all kind of – because I'm going to work as long as I can.
Good. Okay.
I'm a truck driver, so I don't mind working. And as long as my knees will hold out, I'll work as long as I can work. I put 22 – I think it's 22% a weekend.
Good.
And then
wow.
The company puts 4-6% in.
Better.
That's great.
So
what's the size of your?
I want to be where I want to be.
What's the size of your account? What's the rough size of your account?
Right now, it's not real big because I took it's 59.5. I took some money out and paid off all my bills.
Okay.
So now I want to build it back up, and I've got some other money that'll be coming to me later on.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like you're
to match what I took out, but I want to get my 401. I want to be able to. I guess what I need to do is call y'all, maybe sit down with y'all, and you can invite me because I want to make back what I took out.
Yeah.
And you know, kind of grow it so that, you know, I'm going to let my wife retire before I retire, and I'll work as long as I can. I Okay. I don't really need to sit home.
Okay.
The number one thing that you said that's going to help you in the long run is that you're willing to work for a long time. Premature retirements can absolutely kill somebody's dream. And sometimes, unfortunately, those premature retirements are involvoluntary.
Yeah, some of the experts estimate that you need about $5 million to retire early. I don't think it's quite that high, but but needless to say, it's quite high. So the longer you work, the better your chance of success of not running out of money in retirement. Yeah,
every year you continue working has a double whammy. You make money, and you don't spend what you've already made. So keep it up. You're on the right track. Give us a call at 904-685-1505, which you can always find on our website, VanWeFinancial.com. Just like that.
Okay, guys, I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one. All right. Now, I love hearing things like that.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like he's on the right track.
Yep, and he got square with the world, and he's willing to work to get it back. That's a formula for success.
Definitely.
And listening to the show will add to that.
No doubt.
Go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And I remind you that the trivia question is out there. If you earned a dollar in 1913, the year the Fed was started, how many dollars would you have to earn today to have the same purchasing power as that dollar? Now, we're going to start a new segment today that isn't really a new segment. What's really new is I'm giving it a name. Going to be our AOC moment. All probably know what an AOC is.
Yeah,
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You have to say it with some kind of flair and bounce, apparently. I call her OCD, so I'm trying to be good and call her AOC at this point. There were some things said, but first.
Oh, yes, we have a caller.
Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning.
How are you?
It's Bob. And I met with you guys recently. How
well,
are
good.
Doing?
We are never better.
Well, we're expanding your listening audience. My wife is next to me, and she's listening now, too.
Well, great. Good. Welcome.
Yeah. That's the first step in getting your finances in order is to listen to your show.
Yeah, well,
you guys give a lot of good advice.
Getting organized is part of it, and then following through is the biggest part.
Yes, this is true.
What can we do for you?
Hey, I was going to see if I could take a shot at your trivia.
But of course.
The dollar in 1913 now, in order to equal the buying power of that dollar, I think is about $25 maybe?
Ding, ding, ding.
Good calculating.
We have a winner. Yes, it's actually $25.50, so I would take anything in the bracket of the integer below and the integer above, and you have nailed it. If you want to look at that in inverse, the dollar's lost 96% of its purchasing power since 1913. And as I mentioned earlier, I always have a point with my trivia questions. One of the reasons the Fed exists, supposedly, is to promote a stable dollar. I would call them not a fail, but the most dismal failure you could ever imagine.
We were talking... We're looking at going to Italy for a trip, and we were talking about the dollar versus the Italian currency, and I was the euro. And I was explaining to her $1 is equal to 0.88 euros.
Mm-hmm.
Explaining that relationship to her. So
I've seen it at a buck and a half. I've seen it at 0.7. Actually, if you go on Clark Howard, one of the things on his website is how to play that currency exchange. Sometimes you're better off to get your money here at a Federal Reserve Bank or something like that. Sometimes you're better off to go over there and get it exchanged. But he's always a wealth of information as far as the cleverest and cheapest way to do something of that nature.
I ran into Clark Howard in Ponte Vedra at the Chick-fil-A one day.
Yeah, he lives right down the road a little bit. I won't give away that location.
He loves their ice cream.
I'm not surprised. He does have something of a sweet tooth. But he's a wealth of info.
And we really appreciate you guys.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll let Alan get your name and address. And what do we got today for a prize, Adam?
It's either a Peterbrook or a Publix gift card. I'll have to check what we
have.
Can't
go wrong with either of those.
It's $25 to spend.
No, nothing wrong with either of those. It's Valentine's Day coming up.
Absolutely. That might lean one way or the other. All right, we'll put you on hold. Thanks so much. Good to hear from you.
All right, nice to talk to you.
All right, $25.50 instead of a dollar.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You wonder why
96%.
You wonder why you make a lot of money and you just don't seem to get anywhere. And now I want everybody to remember also that we didn't have an income tax in 1913. That $25.50 is after tax money. So you want to make a good argument for adding 24% to it? There you go. If it's a marginal amount of earnings that you have to get to do it, then you're probably looking at $35 or something like that. And if you think that's going to get any better, we'll try to explain to you why that won't happen. And I think our classic example will be a little help from AOC.
So back to the AOC moment of the week. She decided to release what she called details of her new Green Deal this week. And I'm just going to read you some of the rather ambitious goals, and I want you to think about how much this might cost to implement, should it become a reality, which it won't. Anyways, first, ban all forms of affordable energy, so no more oil, no more natural gas to create electricity. Eliminate nuclear energy. Why? I have no idea. It's the only real clean, efficient way to create clean energy these days, but we're gonna ban it. Eliminate 99% of cars. So basically the internal combustion engine, gone. We'll all be driving Teslas. Gut and rebuild every building in America.
Will they be free?
Probably. Why not? Gut and rebuild every building in America up to the most current energy efficient standards. So that seems reasonable. Eliminate air travel. So if I was a property owner and was doing an Airbnb in Hawaii, I'd probably sell that pretty quickly. Government guaranteed job for those that want to work. For those that don't want to work, who are unable or unwilling, and that is a quote, you get money from the government. So economic security. So you can either work or not work, whatever. You get free education for life, any college or trade school, free healthy food from the government, a house, everyone will have access to safe, affordable, adequate housing. And the last one is we need to get rid of all beef because cows are killing the world by farting.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's all. That was the details of her plan.
And what would be free under the new Green Deal?
Well, what wouldn't be free, I think, is an easier question to answer.
Where are you going to get the money to pay for all this?
Well, that part she didn't really get into.
She did answer it. She was asked and she answered it. Well, had the Federal Reserve print it?
Oh, yeah.
I told you I had a quote from a famous economist who looks and sounds a lot like me.
Mm-hmm.
You ready? Governments can print money, but they can't print wealth.
No, definitely not.
You know, that should go down in history, right?
Yeah.
Of course, I haven't Googled it. I might have read it somewhere 200 years ago. I don't know. But
you also can't tax your way to prosperity.
All right. How about this one? This is Milton Friedman. Now, when I quote Milton Friedman, it's like quoting the Bible to me.
Yeah, same here.
One of the great mistakes is to judge policies and programs by their intentions rather than their results.
Yeah, that's
Milton
about right.
Friedman. And then, while I'm on these things, Tennessee Williams, you can be young without money, but you can't be old without it. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, guys. I think I'm going to sign up to be AOC's campaign manager in 2028.
Stand in line.
We're going to have these red hats that say, make communism great again.
MCGA, I like it. So we can sing their tune to the tune of YMCA. I can see it now. A campaign slogan, a song, and holy cow. That was very good. Yeah, I like
it. Thank God she can't run until 2028. Not that she would win then anyway. But
By then, our taxes will be back up, so she'll be partway home.
Yeah.
The Paul Ryan fumble on the 1 yard line has left the individual tax rate still subject to going up in 2026. And if Republicans can't get their act back together and take over the House again, it could be a problem out there. It probably won't, but it could. I think the Democrats will probably give it back inadvertently by just letting things like AOC run around and have a mouth and a mouthpiece.
Well, you know what gets me is that every time she opens her mouth, it's on the internet. I mean, it's just what is this peon one person out of 535 that has no power. Why is she being quoted? Everything she says is quoted.
Well, don't make the obvious mistake by trying to quiet her, though. Every time she opens her mouth on TV, the world is a little better off.
The media has decided she is the media darling of the day, and they love her. So
just keep her talking.
Yep.
Keep Nancy talking, keep AOC talking, and our side will look really, really good before very long. That's the way I see it, anyway. All right, well, I love it, Chuck. Why don't you make up one of those dummy hats, and you can bring it over to the office, and we'll all wear it for our clients.
All right.
Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
That's good.
Yeah.
Got 30 seconds or so? All right, I'm going to read you a little thing from the Beatles. A lot of you will know it. Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me, because I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. Should 5% appear too small, be thankful that I don't take it all, because I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. How about that? All right, we'll wrap this up. We've got a couple other things. A word on Social Security, because I've been doing a little of that every week, and there's always one more topic to cover. It seems it's very complicated. So don't go anywhere. We will be back right after a short break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we've had our trivia question answered, and the only other thing that I need to throw in here is the segment is sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Things are starting to grow. I can see it in my yard. Call Troy at 662-9794. All right, wrapping up our AOC moment, the tax rates that have been proposed by the likes of her and her crazy following are between 70 and 90%.
Yep.
And that does not include state and local, Social Security, all this.
No, that's just federal tax rate.
But it doesn't kick in until $10 million.
Right, but what do you think that someone earning $10 million is going to do? Either
earn nine.
They're going to earn $9,999,999, or they're going to move. So those are the only two options.
The other pertinent saying that comes to mind is any government that is big enough to take 70% of your earnings over $10 million is big enough to take 70% over a much lower number.
Oh, that's just a starting point. It always is.
Always is. All right, do you want to wrap up anything that you still need to laugh at?
No, I'm good. Let's move on to Social Security.
Okay. What happens? Let's talk about what used to happen. Social Security has changed a lot in its time, and some of it has been, I would say, very detrimental to good planning. I'm sure some of the things that they put in there or found were in there were done truly inadvertently, and now they've restricted some of that. And what I'm talking about today, even though I'm thinking of two separate things, but the other one's for a different time, is the do-over. We used to have a do-over provision that if you signed up at, say, age 62 or any age prior to 70, you could collect for as long as you wanted to. And then if all of a sudden you decided, perhaps you're going back to work. Maybe you retire at 62, take Social Security. About age 63 and a half, you decide, I'm bored. I'm going back to work. Well, if you're back to work, then you're still not full retirement age. One of the things you could do is repay every penny that they gave you. And no tax, no interest, no nothing. Just repay the money. And it's like it never even happened. And what happened then was that they pushed your benefit forward by the 8% a year all the way back to where you were. So it was truly like it never even happened. So there were people who every year or two decided that they wanted the bigger payout and they were financially okay to do it. So they'd pay it back. And full disclosure, we did that. My wife started taking it early and we got into it a ways and said, this is really stupid. We don't need to do this. And it would be far smarter to get that 8% accumulation a year. So we paid it back, and it was easy. And the people we dealt with, they were actually out of the Chicago office, and they were absolutely friendly and helpful. I have no complaints whatsoever. Got it done. We waited until later and then filed again, and it was fine. Well, that was a game that a lot of people like to play. They do it annually. And that every time they lived through a year and had good health and all that, they figured, well, maybe I'm going to live longer, so I'll get a bigger payment. So they pay it back and bump it up 8%, start again, and it worked fine. Well, the Social Security people, which actually is probably more like the Congress, decided, yeah, it's too much gamesmanship. It's going to cost us too much money. People are living so long. If we got to pay them more every month, it's just more out of our pockets, and on. So they cut it back. But it's still available. One time for 12 months following your date of filing, you can still do a do-over. It has to be within 12 months of your filing. It doesn't matter what age you are. But you can do it one time. You can pay it back and redo it, and then you're done. That's it. So remember, if you have a moment like that and you want to, say, do go back to work or get married or you win a lottery or whatever the heck might happen to you, you can pay it all back if you haven't been collecting for more than 12 months. And then you can start again at a future date whenever you want to, up to age 70. 70 is the max because there's no accumulation on it anymore. So you can start again, and they will credit you your full 8% increase that happens by waiting between 62 and 70 anyway. So when people say the do-over is gone, that's not exactly true. It's just really sharply limited. But I've seen a lot of people change. Some of them, well, I'm filing and I'm retiring. And you see them 3 years later and say, well, I did file, but I've been working. I didn't actually retire. Well, they're passing up the extra money. I don't believe that most people who file early are making a mistake because most of them are using it as needed income. If you are doing it just because you want to get the money while it's still there, that's not really sound reasoning if you're in your, say, 55 range or more. We will not have to worry. Now, I'm looking at Adam over here and thinking, you know, every time he pays in, he sends it in and they send it to me. I love that system. It works for me.
It's called a Ponzi scheme.
It's exactly what it's called. But it's going to be good for a while. The problem is we have had periods of massive unemployment where not enough people are paying in. The trust fund that was built up over time, and use that term loosely, remember Al Gore's lockbox, that lockbox got full. And then Congress decided one day they're going to start spending it.
As they always do.
Yep. And they replaced money with IOUs. And the IOUs were sitting in a filing cabinet in West Virginia, along with pretty much everything else the government did. Thanks, Bob Byrd. But I digress. So they would add an IOU every now and again to the file drawer. Well, at that certain point, they started spending it. And then a certain point a little bit later, all of a sudden, all the people that were paying in, who used to exceed all the people taking money out, that formula switched. Our generation got older. We're turning 65, 66, 67, 10 to 14,000 of us a day, and we're filing big time, much more so than the ability of the younger generation to support us. So what happens? Congress removes an IOU from that self-same drawer every once in a while and throws it into the budget. Well, A, it's inflationary, but there again, that's not my topic today. But what happens when the last IOU is gone? Well, according to Social Security, the law of the land says that if you don't have all the money, you can't pay all the benefits. Mm-hmm. So right now, out there around 32, somewhere there.
32 is what I hear consistently.
I think with the booming economy, that number is going to go out a little more. But if you're Adam's age, he's 42 now, I think. If you look out at 20, 35, 36, somewhere in there, you're going to be starting to think about these things right about then.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one of the greatest anecdotes ever. Nancy Pelosi was giving a speech to a college graduating class, and she said, I don't know what all this fuss is about. Social Security's sound for 30 years. You look at the audience, it's made up of 22-year-olds. I don't really think that was what she meant to convey, but I couldn't stop laughing. What are we going to do? Well, I'll promise you what we're going to do. You're going to pay more. You're going to have your benefits delayed further. And the alternative is you're only going to get about 70% of what they promised you. So if you're old enough that you're worried about having the money there, fine. But if you're younger, Adam and I, in our daily practice, we like people who come in and they're doing long-term planning, and they say, well, I'm not really counting on Social Security because I'm young and it might not be around. And it, you know, if it's there later, fine. But I love that attitude. Solve your problem yourself and then see if it's there, and you'll live just a little bit better, or you'll be better equipped to handle the inflation between now and then. So if you're, there's a dividing line between about 50 and 55. Don't worry about it if you're my age. Worry about it a lot if you're Adam's age, and long run, you'll be just fine.
Well, you don't have to worry about it if you plan on not having it. So yeah, if you're my age, just design your retirement around it not being there, and if it's there, like you mentioned, it's just a bonus.
Yeah, if we can keep this economy rolling along in the job creation like we are, every time 300,000 people go to work, then it gets a little bit easier for the system to sustain itself more, but it will never self-correct. The numbers do not allow that at this point. So we are going to have to all kind of sit down one day and have an absolutely serious discussion about how we're going to fix this. Reagan did it in the 80s. He gave me 30 years of warning that I was going to have to be a little bit older when I took full retirement for Social Security. If we do that to the next generation, we can limp it along for another two or three decades. It has to be done. But don't do stupid things because you don't think it's going to be there. That's my wisdom for today. Well, this has been fun.
Yeah.
And we'll have a new AOC moment for you next week, I'm sure, because can't keep her mouth shut. <you know? laughs> And it's always going to impact your money like everything else we did. But thank you, everyone, for listening. We will see you at the same time next week. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour in Year 5.